All right, welcome to the Out of Chicago Photography Podcast. I'm Chris Smith, and I'm here with Jim Welninski. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Hi, Chris.
Hey. So Jim is an architectural photographer. He is a fine art architectural photographer. He does long exposure photography, and he's really well known for his black and white photography. And I'm going to say this, that for me, his claim to fame is I think he's our only presenter who will be at the summer conference. He's going to be at the New York conference, and he is leading a workshop with me coming up next week. So it's going to be great. So welcome to the show, Jim. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris. You must really like me.
I do like you. You're all right. You're a good guy. So you're here in Chicago, and you're shooting down in Chicago quite a bit, but you're all over the place. But give us a little bit of the background. I think you used to be in photography a while ago and then weren't doing it for a little while, and now you're back into it really hardcore. Give us a little bit of your background.
Well, my background is really in media production. I started out as an audio engineer. Started out as a dialogue editor, actually, back in the days when we used to use razor blades and splicing tape.
And I don't have to do that with this, yeah.
Yeah, and then from there I went into the video end of the business, and I was an editor. I did some producing, and I ended my career there as an animator, which is where I first got introduced to Photoshop back in version 3, not CS3, but version 3, when we first got layers. We were so excited.
It's before me.
One level of undo. And I did do some photography just on an amateur level. Like a lot of people, when my kids were born, I went out and bought a camera and started fooling around with it. But when I got out of the media production business, I sold all my stuff and kind of walked away from it and just came back to it years later. And now I'm in, full force up to my neck doing photography, and I can't imagine a better way to spend my time.
Yeah, and you've won quite a few awards. You have you've been doing a lot of teaching. You are teaching at the Winter Conference as well. Yeah, I should have added that one in there too. You're basically doing everything that we're doing this year with Out of Chicago. And tell us, I think at the summer class you're teaching black and white photography. Tell us what you're going to do in that one.
Well, the focus for that is going to be vision and execution. I'm a big believer in what I call deliberate shooting. I used to be a kind of a spray and pray kind of shooter. But when I started to work on photographs from a project basis, I found that my percentage of keepers went way up because I knew what I was trying to shoot. I knew what I was trying to say. And for me, when I'm photographing, it's really about the inner experience that I have when I'm out in the field. And I'm trying to recreate that in a print. So oftentimes when I start a project, I'll actually write about it first. That's something that no one would ever see, but it helps me to really codify my ideas and decide what it is that I'm trying to say.
That's so pretty cool.
When we're at the summer conference, we'll be talking about deliberate shooting and not just going out and hoping that you're going to get something. How to approach a building, how to discover what some photographers call the soul of a building. Because the thing to remember about architectural photography, which is what we'll be doing at the summer conference, is that nothing is there by accident. Every single feature that you see was put there by the architect for one purpose. And I know some architects, and I can tell you that they, when they design a building, they look at the building from every possible aspect that you can imagine, including standing on the street and looking up. So the surroundings play a big part of it. Of course, the light plays a big part of it. So we're going to be talking about all those things and how to integrate those things into an architectural photograph.
So most of the architectural photographs you do are black and white. I mean, you're saying all this stuff, but you're going to be bringing that all back together into the black and white as well, right?
Yes. And I like to work in black and white because black and white allows me to, again, touch my inner experience. It allows me to step back from reality and really create a photograph that matches my vision. I'm not so tied to what I shoot. For me, what comes out of the camera is just a starting point. It's raw material that I shape later in post-production.
What would you say? What's your favorite tip? What's your number one tip for when you're shooting for a black and white image?
I like to shoot in flat light, actually. Then I don't have shadows to deal with. I can recreate light later and really direct the viewer the way I want. So for me, an overcast day with a good sky is a godsend.
So you don't need all the shadows. You want it flat, and then you can bring that out later yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right. Well, since we're done black and white, what is your number one tip for post-processing black and white? And what software do you use?
I use, of course, Lightroom and Photoshop. My main black and white conversion tool is SilverFX Pro, which I'm not really sure how much longer that's going to last because, as you probably know, and as everybody probably knows, Google has stopped supporting that. So I'm searching for some different tools. But the big thing that I would say is that when you convert a photograph to black and white, what you're looking for is a very low contrast, flat image to start with. And then add light and add contrast selectively to fit your vision.
That sounds like what I try to do. I don't think it turns out like yours do, but yeah, absolutely. So what is it about the Nick Silver effects or whatever it is you may start to look for in the future that sets it apart from just doing it in Lightroom? Because I've gotten to the point where I feel that I've learned most of the things that I would need for a black and white image, how to do that in Lightroom. But what is it that, I mean, you're the master. What is it that sets that apart and makes it different?
Well, I like SilverFX Pro because I have control over, massive control over all the tones in my image. And I have massive control over all the contrast in my image. And by that, I mean that that tool gives me the ability to control shadows, midtones, and highlights separately for both light and darkness and contrast. Plus, the great thing about SilverFX Pro is the control points. The control points are unsurpassed for fixing small problems and helping me flatten things out. So for me, that's the best tool that I've found.
It's just my
preference.
Sure. Do you still do selections in that when you need to in Photoshop, or is that just not your thing? I know it's not my thing, that's for sure.
I do selections. Depending on the image, I've spent a week making selections. And I'll make my selections first. I may make more selections that I eventually end up using. But once I start working, I don't want to be interrupted. I don't want to have my creative flow interrupted by having to go back and say, oh, wow, I really need a selection of this. Now I have to stop doing what I'm doing and spend 2 hours making a selection. So I'll make all my selections up front because I like to control each individual element in my photograph separately, depending on how I want the light to fall, where I want the shadows to fall, and how much I want to feature that element. I may want to feature a dominant structure in the photograph and have everything else pushed way back into the background, but still want selective light on those things. And the only way to do that is with great selections.
You don't think it's good enough to go in with a Wacom tablet and just kind of a brush with a certain opacity and just try and mess around the outsides? It's just going to be too obvious what you've done?
It may be good enough for some people, but it's not good enough for me because I'm a perfectionist and, you know, I'll spot the smallest little error. So I prefer to work with selections.
Gotcha.
And, maybe it goes back to my days in video production when we didn't have the selection tools that we have now and we had to make all our selections by hand. And still, that's the way I do most of my selections.
Yeah, well, geez, I don't know. It's too much work for me. I just brush stuff on. Say, it looks good enough for me. Yeah, no, I know it is. So you were on the tour with us that Angie and I did. We actually had the bus. We went around town, and that was quite a bit of fun with Angie McMonagle. And you were doing a ton of long exposures. That was a fun day. We had an interesting sky. I remember it was pretty cold, but it was like a lot of ice crystals up in the sky. We were getting halos around the sun and stuff like that. But I remember that we were, I was being that shooter that's just taken a ton of shots. And I remember you set up on the corner and you were there for a long time and you basically just got the one shot. And then you moved on to our next location. You got one other shot and you were doing all long exposures. You had the neutral density filters and everything. You know, tell us a little bit about what you like so much about long exposure photography.
And I missed lunch almost, if you remember that day, because I was out in the corner and you guys were all eating.
Yeah, well, it's
the
for
thing
your
I
passion.
Like about long exposure is that it allows me to take another step back from reality. So when you are making a long exposure, what you're actually doing is photographing time, which is something that we don't think about when we're photographing still images. Aesthetically, long exposures give you that really kind of velvety shadows and silky, milky whites. And it's because the light, even though the shutter may be open for 6 minutes, the light is still moving. So you get this kind of surreal sense from these photographs. And then when you convert it to black and white, you take another step further back from reality. And again, that allows me to get closer to the inner experience that I'm having when I stop and say, wow, I really want to photograph this structure. So that's why I work in long exposure so much. Plus, I just love those kind of cool, streaky skies. Everybody loves those.
Oh, yeah.
The water that looks like glass, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And what are your personal rules? Will you go and take a sky and put it into a different image? I know you're trying to create a piece of art. So is that okay in your playbook or not?
Yes.
All right.
I would use a magic marker if I thought it would get me closer to what I wanted.
That's
I am
cool.
not above replacing a sky. Or manipulating a sky or moving things around in a sky to get things where I want them. I've done that many times, and some of my award-winning images are manipulated in that way. I hate the word manipulation. I wish there was a better word, but
yeah,
it sounds like cheating.
Well, you're creating a work of art, and there's no such thing as cheating then. So the long exposure stuff, you're going to be teaching that in New York City with us, and you're also going to do your black and white class. So tell us, in the long exposure class, are you going to be giving people tips on shooting it? Are you going to be talking about equipment and everything? What's the plan for that long exposure class?
We're going to be talking about all of those things, equipment, shooting, and vision. And really, I like to think of long exposure as not a genre of photography. I like to think of it as a tool. And many times I will combine an HDR set and a normal exposure and a long exposure to get the effect that I want. The process for making a long exposure photograph is really simple, actually. It's a checklist. And I'm going to share that checklist. If you just go down that checklist and do the things that you're supposed to do, assuming that you have the right equipment, you're going to get a good exposure. Now, you know, having said that, there is a certain amount of guesswork to long exposure and experimentation because the light, of course, doesn't always behave the way you think it's going to behave. So sometimes it requires taking an exposure or two. But really, it's a simple process. It's far less complicated than people think.
Now, as far as the equipment, you actually do need, you can't just come out with just a camera and a lens. You're going to need a tripod. You're going to need some of these filters. Tell people what they'll need. If they want to come to, well, like in New York, you'll be doing your workshop on that Sunday out on the streets of New York City. If you decide to do any long exposures, like what kind of stuff are people going to need to bring?
Okay, so the first thing you need is a good sturdy tripod. And the reason it needs to be sturdy isn't just to hold up your camera. If your shutter's open for 6 minutes and a good wind comes along, the tripod needs to be able to hold up or you'll blow the whole exposure. You need a head on the tripod that's not going to sag. And I'm sure we've all had those problems where you set it up and you think it's just perfect and then
it's the worst. And then you're like, oh, well, I'll just set it up just a tiny bit higher and let it droop into position. That's the worst.
And it never works out the way So personally, when I go out, and I won't have this equipment when I'm in New York because it's just too much stuff to bring, I actually use a geared head on my tripod. And my big tripod I carry it around looks like a golf bag because it's so big.
Yeah, I remember seeing it.
And then, so you need a good tripod with a good head.
Which geared head do you have?
Bulb mode.
I just totally interrupted you.
Your exposures are going to be longer than 30 seconds.
Right.
Most cameras will only go down to 30 seconds.
Right.
And you need a way to calculate the exposure. There are a couple of apps that I use to do that. One of them is called Longtime. It's my favorite.
Okay.
And you need a remote shutter release.
Is that in as Love You Longtime or just Longtime?
Oh, Love You Longtime. You need a remote shutter release so you don't have to touch the camera. And you need a set of ND filters. So the filters that I use are Format high-tech filters. And I like them because they have virtually no distortion and not a lot of color cast to them. Some, but not a ton. So a 3, a 6, and a 10-stop filter, usually a set of 3, will do the job. And my recommendation would be to anyone who's thinking about buying filters, I prefer the circular ones just for convenience. The other ones are the square ones, and you need to put a filter holder on the front of your lens. The circular ones are a little more robust. I'm not real gentle with my gear, and they're just easy to screw on. But what I would suggest is that, let's say that your main lenses are 77 millimeter ring size.
Mm-hmm.
So buy 100 millimeter filters and then buy a step up ring. And the reason for that is because you're going to be stacking filters sometimes. And when you stack filters, the possibility for vignetting goes way up.
Right,
it's
right.
The filters that are bigger than your lens, the ring size, that
you'll start to see them. Yeah, and they start darkening the edges. Yeah, if it's So okay, so you're recommending, what'd you say, like 100 something?
Well, I
go bigger though.
The Nikon FX lenses are 77 mm-hmm. millimeters.
Right.
So if you buy 100 millimeter lens filters, then you're going to have plenty of room on the outside to compensate for that vignetting.
Yeah, and those filters will be more expensive, but the fact that you'll just have one set of them, the step-up rings are super cheap.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And I would also suggest brass step-up rings.
Okay.
Because your filters won't get stuck.
Yeah, that can be a pain.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and here's the other thing. We spend thousands of dollars on cameras and bags and tripods, and then I see people come out with these cheap neutral density filters, right? You got to treat your tripod and your neutral density filters the same way you treat your cameras. We spend thousands of dollars on lenses. Get a good tripod, get good neutral density filters. Then you don't have to replace them. They're going to last your whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I wanted to ask you earlier, what is the geared head that you use?
It's a Manfrotto 405, I think.
All right. And you've used that for a while?
Yeah, Manfrotto makes two geared heads. I think the 405 is the big one off the top of my head. And the other one they call a junior. But I have the big one, which I love. It's awesome.
And you got, what are the sticks you have? I mean,
I have, what do I have? I have Vanguard, some Vanguard carbon fiber sticks.
Yeah. Okay. Put it all together.
There's a whole story about how I got a great deal on those too. So
everyone's got their stories. Yep. Uh huh.
I got $600 sticks for $150.
That's great. What else? Oh, so do you shoot with Nikon then? You were talking about Nikon. Is that the camera you use?
Yes, I'm a Nikon shooter. Why am I a Nikon shooter? Because it's the first camera I bought.
Me too, except it was a Canon. Yes, uh-huh.
All right, so, you know, you start investing in lenses and you're kind of trapped into that system. So many times I've wished I had a Canon camera because they have a 17 millimeter tilt shift lens. It's an amazing piece of gear.
Yeah. Well, guess what? I sold mine 3 months ago. And guess what showed up on my doorstep this morning from Mr. Brian Walworth? A new 17 millimeter tilt shift lens. So I got it back. I'm a happy kid again. Yeah. I didn't have it for 3 months, but it's back. Maybe it was more like 6 months, but I got it.
Yeah, that's an amazing piece of gear.
Yeah. No, it's my favorite lens ever for sure. Yeah. Love it. I'm going to go shoot in Acadia. Down on the beaches, I don't know if I should bring a 16 to 35 weather sealed or that. I don't know. I think I could make some sweet images with that. Acadia out in Maine on the beaches, the rocky beaches. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if I want it to be weather sealed or if I want the tilt shift and, you know, go with that magic. We'll decide. It'll be one of the two.
You can't go wrong either way with that.
Yeah. What lenses do you use when you're shooting?
I use a Nikon 16-35. That's my mm-hmm. wide angle. And my walk around lens is a 28-300. So my setup's really simple.
Yeah, that's nice. So when you're shooting the long exposures, when you're shooting small apertures, there's no reason to go with the fast glass necessarily. So get a couple of decent zoom lenses and you're good to go, right?
Well, I usually shoot at f/8 when I'm shooting long exposures.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because A, I'm on a tripod. B, I get good depth of field. And C, that's the sweet spot of the lens. Mm-hmm. So there's really, there's really no reason for me to go to f/16 or f/18 or f/22 and risk diffraction in the photograph when I'm on a tripod anyway. What's it going to add, another minute or so to my exposure? I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So if you needed the depth of field, you would, but you're saying in most situations you don't need it.
Well, if I shoot at f/8 and I use hyperfocal distance and calculate that, which is a chart that I take with me. For those of you that don't know what hyperfocal distance is, if you calculate hyperfocal distance based on your focal length and your aperture, you can get everything in focus from whatever point you calculate from to infinity. So I never have that problem. And I just carry a chart with me, and it tells me where, you have to focus at 11 feet, 4 inches. And then I guess, and I never have a problem.
Now, what do you have to tell it as far as that chart? You have to tell it, like, what focal length you're using? You have to tell it what?
Focal length and aperture.
And that's all?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell it, like, so when you're doing hyperfocal distance, obviously I've never done it. When you're doing it, I shouldn't have said that. When you're doing it, it doesn't care, like, how far away, like, the main subject is or something?
No, not at all.
So say you're trying to get, I don't know, like wildflowers in the foreground or something, and they're only like 4 or 5 feet away from you. You still just shoot for the hyperfocal distance that the chart gives you?
Right. So the hyperfocal distance then will return two pieces of data. It will return hyperfocal distance and near focal distance. So everything from near focal distance to infinity will be sharp, but you focus at hyperfocal distance. So near focal distance is closer to you. Hyperfocal distance is a little further. So you just need to make sure that when you're setting up your shot, nothing is in your shot that is closer than the near focal distance, because that would be out of focus. Does that make sense?
It does. What if you intentionally want something up close, though? You can't go hyperfocal. You just got to focus a little closer.
I'm not clear on what you're asking.
Like, there's something that I want in the foreground, and I want it to be huge in my frame, so I want it to only be, 3 feet in front of my camera, but my chart is telling me that's too close. It's probably going to be out of focus.
Well, you might have to move your camera, or you might have to change the aperture.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So there might be a case when it's like, f/13, f/16 may be better if you're trying to get that really, really wide depth of field.
Yeah, no doubt. Of course, if you're shooting architecture at night and you want those nice sunbursts, on the lights, you're going to want to shoot at a smaller aperture. You're going to want to be up around f/18 to get that effect.
Right. Yeah. And do you find that you get those starbursts to really burn in more when you use a long exposure? I feel like I do, but I've never done an actual test on it. I feel like my longer exposures, I see the starburst appearing more. I don't know. Any sense on that?
I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Yeah, I don't know. But now I'm going to have to test it.
I'm going to have to test it.
I am a science teacher. I should give it a shot. Do an experiment. So you and I are doing our own workshop. It's unlike anything that I've done before, where we're going to be getting together. Actually, we're getting together in just a few days for our first thing. It might be after people hear this even, and that's going to be on May 2nd in the evening. We're going to get together online. We're going to be doing a hangout, and you're going to be giving us all the tips for going out and shooting and everything we'll need to bring, and if people have questions, we'll answer it, and we'll talk about logistics for the day. That's going to be pretty cool. But then on May 7th, we're going out downtown Chicago. We're going to hit all the best spots. We're going to hit all the best spots for all the architectural stuff and everything else. It's going to be a blast. And afterward, this is why we're calling it a workshop. It's more than just going out and shooting. We're going to get together twice after that. The Monday after that, we're going to get together. You're going to talk about post-processing. Then we're going to give people a week to work on their images and get back together and do kind of a show and let everyone show off their images. So I'm really looking forward to that. What do you think?
I'm words really of wisdom excited for about people? This. I think that one of the cool things that we're going to be doing is we're starting the photo walk actually later in the day. Mm-hmm. We're going to start around 2 o'clock, and we're starting at the Opera House, and we're going to kind of make a circle and come back to the Opera House after sundown, because we're going to be doing some night shooting as well. So that will give us an opportunity to actually do a little bit of long exposure shooting. And in that case, probably don't need all the neutral density filters. If we need one, a 3-stop is more than adequate. But we'll do some traffic stuff on Michigan Avenue. There's a great shot right across from the Civic Opera House, kitty corner at night that's all lit up. I call it the mountain of glass. And you get the Willis Tower in the background. And I'm hoping that we can actually shoot the Board of Trade at night as well, straight down LaSalle Street without getting run over by a cab, as I almost did when I got my shot of that.
If you come on our thing,
it's going to be a fun night.
Yeah,
you know, we'll do Millennium Park probably at sunset.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool place to shoot at sunset. We'll set up at the back of the Pritzker Pavilion and take some blue hour shots. So we're going to be shooting the Aon Building and the Trump and the Water Tower and Marina Towers and some of the other little goodies that I know about down there. So it'll be a fun time. I'm really looking forward to it. And then the following Monday, we'll be talking about post-processing. So I'll have some of the images that we shot that Saturday processed, and we'll tear them apart and talk about how I did what I did and give people some ideas and answer some questions about post-processing. And then everybody goes away for a week and does their own thing. And if people have questions during the week, they can call me or email me or send me a text message. And hopefully I'll be available to coach anybody through any of the issues that they have so that we can have a really awesome show on the last session.
Yeah, and if they email me, I'll make sure to forward it on to you.
Why, thank you.
No problem. So, you know, I'm excited about this because I think it's an interesting thing we're doing where we have these sessions where you could live way out in the suburbs, you could live 5-10 hours from Chicago, and you could, you know, we get to know each other that first night, just next week, you know, online. You'll make sure you're bringing all the right stuff, but you only have to come to Chicago the one time. We're going to spend that whole afternoon, evening shooting together, but it's an experience where you get that personal, you know, we're all together, but we're going to get together 4 times, but you don't have to come to Chicago 4 times to make that happen. So even if you're not right here in the city, this I think could be a fun experience for you. And if you heard all the places that Jim just listed, it's like, I mean, that's got to be 10-15 of the number one places from, you know, the book that I wrote, Photographer's Guide to Chicago, all in one night. And it's going to be
which
a lot of fun.
Which is a great book, by the way. Everybody should buy that.
Thank you, Jim. Or yeah, they should all buy it. Exactly. That's right. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So that's next week. We're doing the first thing. If you listen to this late, we will be recording that whole thing from Monday, May 2nd, and we'll put that up so anyone can view that and jump in and do the rest of it. We won't be able to record May 7th when we're actually shooting, but yeah, so jump in, get in on that before then. Go to outofchicago.com. You'll see a link to the thing, or outofchicago.com/events, and you'll see the event is in there, and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a special night of shooting and everything else that goes along with it.
And I promise you, you are going to come away with some great shots and some views of things that you've never really thought about before. Because I've spent the last 2.5 years shooting down there. And a lot of these buildings I've shot from every vantage point you could imagine. So it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Come out and join us.
And I think that you'll get images. You'll be like, oh, that was pretty cool. That was really good. And I think that after you get a chance to work on them using the techniques we're going to learn on that Monday afterward, you'll be like, okay, I get it. There's some post-processing that goes on here too. And now I'm going to really make some amazing images. So the whole thing put together, it's going to be a ton of fun. So hope you can join us and go to outofchicago.com and you'll see the links there for it. Now, you've been teaching some workshops and you got got some other ones coming up with our buddy Nick Sennett while at their school, at the Richard Stromberg School. You just got finished with, what was this last workshop on? Was that on, tell me, I forget.
Well, I just finished teaching an architectural workshop there, a weekend-long architectural workshop.
Okay.
And right before that, we had a seven-week black and white artistry course.
That's right.
We really dug into the bowels of black and white photography, and talked a lot about how I process my images, and not just how I process them, but a lot of the techniques that the major award-winning photographers are using to make these jaw-dropping kinds of images that you see online. How to create light, how to direct your viewer's eye, how to simplify your composition. And it was a great class. I'm going to be posting some of the work on my website. And I think if you go out to Nick's website, there's some stuff, or Nick's Facebook page, there's some images out there. And we're going to be repeating that class in September. And there's another architectural workshop there in July. And hopefully we'll have some more things going on there too. So I'm pretty excited about working with them.
So that's the Richard Stromberg School, and we interviewed Nick on here in the not too long ago, and he was talking all about the classes they offer. And their website is chicagophotoclasses.com, and you'll see all the stuff that's going on there, including these classes with Jim. So, so join us and join that, and lots of fun stuff coming up. I don't know. What else we got, Jim? What else should we talk about?
Do you have the winning lottery number?
No. I've never had those. I think when I was 13, I won on the roulette wheel. That was about as close as it ever came. My dad said, yeah, I'll go put it on for you. And he said, this will teach him a lesson. And then he came back with about $400. And then it was all downhill from there.
I'm hoping to have some exciting things coming up closer to the end of the year. But nothing that I'm ready to announce yet.
Yeah,
so I'm just going to kind of leave that hanging out there.
Yeah, you and I have some other projects we'd like to work on more, too. I mean,
we do.
Yeah, and you, yeah, you really are going full bore on this whole photography thing. And my favorite part, the education aspect of it, really helping people. And I mean, your passion just shows through for all that you do. And people just love hanging out and learning from you. And the reviews that we got after the winter conference, they're just, you know, blew us away reading through them, some of the comments that we got. So we're super excited to have you in Chicago. We're super excited to have you in New York and all these other things, and really looking forward to getting to know you better and getting to know more of your photography better. Where can people find your personal stuff online, or find your stuff online here, Jim?
People can log on to my website at alteredspacephoto.com, and you can see my work and sign up for my blog and my mailing list, and just kind of keep track of what I'm doing.
Perfect. And we'll have links to all that and to all the to everything we talked about in here all in the show notes for this one. And you can see that at outofchicago.com. Go to the podcast section and you'll see it up there. But hopefully you join us next week. And hopefully you're already signed up for Chicago. That's pretty much sold out at this point. We just posted something today saying we opened up a few more spots, but that's pretty much booked up. You know, there is, though, still a spot or two left in your workshop in Chicago. So if people are interested, they could do the pre-conference workshop. It's on the Thursday before the Out of Chicago conference. So that's on Thursday, June 23rd. And there's a couple spots left there. So that's another place people could get involved. So, yeah, all that great stuff. Anything else? We good?
Nope, I think we're good.
That was good. All right. Thank you so much for doing this, and can't wait to be hanging out with you and teaching so many people and getting some great shots over the next few months.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be working with you, Chris. Thank you.
Happy working with you. All right. We will see you on that workshop next week. All
right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Jim.